Just a note at the top of this episode, since recording a mere hour ago, we've had developments in the race for the Fine Gael leadership. Many of the potential candidates have already ruled themselves out, including Pascal Donoghue, Heather Humphreys and Jennifer Carroll McNeill. By the time you're listening, there may have even been more developments, so keep checking the Journal and enjoy the episode. Welcome to the Journal.ie's The Explainer, where every week we take a deep dive into a different news story. I'm Sinead O'Carroll, sitting in for Laura Byrne, and this week, what next for Leo Varadkar, Fine Gael and Ireland? Well, it's a really lovely week to be sitting in for Laura because an unexpected and quite surprising news announcement came from the Taoiseach. Yesterday, just before 11 o'clock, Fionnán Sheehan from the Irish Independent published a piece entitled Political Earthquake, Big Announcement Expected from Government at 12 noon. Leinster House and all the newsrooms in the country were buzzing. What's happening? Is it an election? Is it a resignation? Is it going to be a damn squib or something even bigger we can't even conjure up in our minds? In the end, Leo Varadkar emerged from government buildings at about 12:15 p.m. to tell the country he was not the best person to lead the country anymore, and therefore he would be stepping down as Fine Gael president and subsequently Taoiseach.
My reasons for stepping down are both personal and political.
And we have a lot of questions. We threw out the original plan for The Explainer, and instead today I'm joined by Deputy Editor Christine Bohan and Assistant News Editor Ronan Duffy to chat about the how, why and what next of that resignation bombshell. Thanks a million for joining me, guys.
Thanks, welcome.
Didn't take a lot of arm pulling.
No, absolutely not.
Ran into the studio this morning.
So, did you see this coming, Chris?
No, nobody saw this coming. This was such a surprise. I was trying to think about the last time we had a really big political surprise like this. And the only thing that even I could think of that came close was Bertie announcing a general election in 2007, maybe.
It's a long time ago.
It's not the same scale. Like, this is the big, maybe one of the biggest political surprises that we've seen maybe in the last 20, 30 years, really. And I've seen a few people claiming in hindsight that maybe they knew or they expected this. But look, let's be honest, like, you know, people saying that his heart wasn't in the job. But none of this was said in the days before, the weeks before. This was kept very tight, which is unusual for Fine Gael as well. Usually they do we often do get leaks from the party. But Christina Finn, our political editor, was ringing around yesterday once we got the hint that something was happening, and nobody was saying anything. Everyone was just on lockdown. It was a really, really well kept secret.
It wasn't even the first guess. The first guess was general election, if you hear a big announcement, wasn't it, Ronan?
Well, that was kind of the first thing that came to mind. But kind of then you start thinking about it and you're like, we have local elections in a couple of months' time. Is this really the time for a general election? And I think once that hour where we didn't know what was happening, a lot of people did think the smart money was on Leo stepping down. But, you know, as Christine said, there was no way anyone could have known for sure. He said last night that he only finally made this decision while he was in Washington, D.C. over the weekend. You know, there has been suggestions that he said in the past that he wouldn't be in politics past 50. And he's 45 now, so not quite at that point yet. So it's not necessarily a surprise that he's left before most politicians would leave, but certainly a shock how it's done. And I think if you saw the faces of the Fine Gael ministers there alongside him yesterday, shock did seem to be the general vibe.
Yeah, because he said that he'd only kind of finally decided in the last few days, and the choreography of it all, he didn't really tell many people until very last minute.
Well, it seems to be he's told the staff in Washington, D.C., and each of the ministers who were asked about it, I saw Simon Coveney, said he got a call from Leo the night before. So, yeah, they didn't have any notice, you know, 12 hours, less than 24 hours notice of this happening. And I suppose, like you said, Sinead, that helped it. It didn't leak in advance and it was a shock to everybody because it was a shock to his own colleagues.
I think political reporters had been saying for some time that he had been more disengaged or, you know, his heart wasn't fully in it. So I think there were some, you know, in retrospect, if we look back, there were perhaps some signs there that he wasn't going to fill out the entire term. So I think maybe the signs were there, but it just still took everyone very much by surprise.
And it's a hard question for a political correspondent to ask, hey, you don't seem to have your heart in the job right now, like while he's standing beside Joe Biden.
It's very difficult.
Yeah.
And for somebody who has been, you know, he had been at the top tier of politics for a long time. He wasn't the kind of person who spent years in the back benches. He had quite a meteoric rise. So, you know, in a sense, he burned brightly and burned out soon, if you could put it that way. And maybe he burnt out quicker than I think people have expected him to. But it's not a surprise that maybe now he feels a bit less excited about the job than he did 10 years ago.
Yeah, because when he was training as a doctor, he said he wanted to be a politician. And then as a politician, he was like, well, I want to be out of here by 50. And he's kind of followed through on both of those. Tell us a little bit about the resignation speech then, Ronan. 12:15, he comes out. We kind of all knew at that point what he was going to say. Talk us through what you thought was the main points.
Well, there's a lot of preamble. I mean, he didn't say straight off the bat that he was going to resign. He kind of outlined his career in politics, you know, what he saw as his achievements. But the real meat of his resignation, I think it's fair to say he didn't really elaborate on it. He said, as you said, Sinead, he said it was a mix of personal and political. Now, it's interesting, in the published speech that we got, it said personal and political, but mainly political. He didn't say that mainly political part when he was speaking, but nor did he mention any kind of personal reasons for coming to this decision. He just spoke about the politics of it. It was quite, you might say, an honest thing for him to say that he feels that Fine Gael can gain seats in the next election, but that when he undertook some soul searching, he didn't think he was the right person to deliver that increase in seats. And honestly, you know, he's probably right about that. He hasn't had a strong electoral record as Fine Gael leader. They lost seats in the 2020 general election. He hasn't won a by-election that are sometimes difficult for government parties to win, but Dublin Bay South shouldn't be difficult for Fine Gael to win. So in a sense, if Fine Gael thought he was going to be this election, you know, vote-winning machine, it hasn't happened. So 2 months out from a local election and after a defeat in referendums, maybe he thought, I don't want to explain another loss.
For me, that was the bit that stood out, Chris, in the speech, that he said it's for political and personal reasons. He got into the political reasons in some ways about Fine Gael, not exactly about the Taoiseach position, it was more about Fine Gael. So it actually led to a lot of people saying, well, what's going on? Is there more to this? Because he said people will look for the real reasons, but this is it. I'm giving you the real reasons. Do we know any more than what he said in his speech?
No, we don't. And I do think you could either read it as there being a little bit of a mystery there, or you can take it at face value and say he told us exactly what he wanted us to know about his reasons for stepping down. The one interesting thing I took from it was that he didn't say anything about the reasons that a lot of Fine Gael TDs have given for their reasons for stepping down recently, which has been personal abuse and work-life balance. So we've seen, I think, 10 Fine Gael TDs have said they won't stand in the next election. The most recent one was Kieran Cannon this week, who talked about the toxicity and the personal abuse he's received, and kind of just the way the discourse, or the way that politicians being treated, has changed in the past 20 years in his time in politics. And I just thought it was interesting that Leo Varadkar didn't touch on either of those things. He kind of alluded to it a little bit when he spoke about the personal reasons. And I thought one of the key parts was when he said, politicians give everything until we can't anymore, and then we have to move on. So look, there could be some scandal, there could be something there that we don't know about. Honestly, I think if we just take him at his word, he just didn't think he was the right person to lead. He just wasn't in the right headspace to continue to do it.
Yeah, after two failed referendums, maybe he felt a local and European election would be too much. So it is actually about the Fine Gael leadership.
Well, at the same time, you know, I think it's perfectly fair that people speculate around these
yeah,
things.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, we look at, for example, last year when Nicola Sturgeon stepped down, that was a surprise as SNP leader. That seemed to be a bit of a, oh, what's going on here? She said, oh, I have no particular reason, nothing's forced me out. A few months later, she was arrested. We all know what kind of happened there. No, no suggestion.
Extremely do you large know disclaimers.
No,
very large, thank
no
you.
Suggestion that there's anything similar in this case. But it kind of goes to show that, you know, Leo himself said yesterday that people are going to speculate as to what is the real reason. This is the real reason. You know, we have to take someone at their face value, and he said these are the reasons.
Another example, Jacinda Ardern, she said people will look for the real reason and nothing has emerged other than she went off, got married and seems to just want a different type of life at the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
And let's make another comparison then, Ronan. Enda Kenny, so Leo Varadkar's predecessor, he stepped down as well, probably in more push rather than like
absolutely
falling on his sword, as Leo Varadkar said yesterday. So bring us through what happened in 2017.
Well, in that instance, it was very different. Enda Kenny had firstly been leader for a lot longer than Leo Varadkar has, and he had led Fine Gael into, I think, 3 elections at that point. 2 of them were successful for Fine Gael in that they were returned from government. Obviously, Enda Kenny lost seats in the 2016 general election, and there was a feeling that he wasn't the right person to lead Fine Gael into the next general election. So after 2016 happened, he was regularly being asked about it. When are you going to step down? What's the mechanics of this? And eventually, you know, he succumbed to the pressure. And that's what happened in 2017. That's certainly not the case here. You know, whether or not we can talk about Leo's motivation for the job, there was an assumption he was going to lead Fine Gael into the general election. He's currently Taoiseach as part of this unprecedented rotation arrangement, and it was certainly believed that he would see Fine Gael through to the end of that. So it is quite different.
Yeah, I was thinking there was the external and the internal pressure on Enda Kenny to step down, like so from within his party, but also externally, there's a lot of criticism. Once he said that he wasn't going to lead Fine Gael into the next election, you don't say that. Like, that's a terrible thing to say after, you know, you've just gotten through an election. So I think he was kind of hobbled from the very start. And I think the other comparison we could think of is that, say, one of the more recent party leaders to step down was Alan Kelly, who I think he put it was stabbed in the front by his party colleagues. So there was kind of behind the scene machinations going on there to get rid of him, to drive him away from the position. There doesn't seem to have been any of that for Leo. It seems to have been very much his own decision, just judging by the surprise and shock from his colleagues yesterday.
Yeah, I think the biggest question then that non-Fine Gael members had was, does this mean we have a general election?
No is the simple answer to that question. You know, it basically, you know, the mechanics of it, it comes down to Fianna Fáil and Green Party. Anyone can be nominated to be Taoiseach. You just need to have enough support in the Dáil to be elected as Taoiseach. And if Fianna Fáil and the Greens continue to support the current coalition, they are going likely to support the next Fine Gael candidate. And they've all come out to say, yes, that's what we intend to do. We intend to see the full government term until about a year's time is the longest it could potentially go. You know, there had been suggestions that there might be election towards the end of this year. This may push things out a bit more, you know, so the current leader might have a bit more time. The new Fine Gael leader might have a bit more time to bed in. Of course, the opposition parties have called for an election, as is their right. They're the opposition. They want the government out. So they said this is as good a time as any. But constitutionally, no, we don't have to have an election once the new Fine Gael leader has the support of the House.
I think it will be something for the new leader to have to navigate, though, because the concern would be that the public might start to clamour for it or to look for one, which we've seen happen in the UK, where they're currently on their third prime minister since the last election. And there is that growing sense of, you know, dissatisfaction or people saying that they want, you know, the election to happen sooner than it's due to happen later this year. And so I just wonder, is there likely to be that kind of public clamouring for an election? Because this will be our third Taoiseach since the last election, which is, to be fair, isn't unusual in Ireland. I think it's something like half of our Taoiseach got into the role without having come through an election. So it's not like it's unprecedented. It's not like it's an unusual thing. And as Ronan says, the opposition have to call for an election. It's literally their role, like right now. But I just think it's easy to see why people would call for one. But I just think the numbers don't add up. It doesn't make sense.
And we do have some votes coming up in a couple of months' time. The local and European elections are happening. And, you know, if there is anger out there, that might be a bloodletting. We will see how that comes. But that might kind of get the pressure off the new Taoiseach to call an election, because they've already had this vote and they'll say, listen, there's one in 8 months' time anyway.
We had talked about this a few weeks ago, that Leo Varadkar, so with the hindsight thing, we had actually talked about whether Leo Varadkar would stay in the job, Ronan, while in the office over a cup of tea. And we had said, well, sure, he can't leave even if he wanted to, because he's leader of the party and they have elections coming up. But then when you think about it, is it a good thing or a bad thing for the Fine Gael party heading into the local and European elections that there is going to be maybe a contest, maybe not, we'll get into that, a new leader, and then, you know, 8 weeks to a vote. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I honestly don't think anybody can say right now whether it's good or bad, because until after the election. Because if the election goes well for Fine Gael, if the locals and Europeans go well for Fine Gael, it's going to be seen as this brilliant strategic move by Leo Varadkar, because it'll have given the party a huge boost ahead of the general election. It'll give momentum to the new leader. It puts them in a really strong position ahead of the general election. Like, it's a really, it could be a good move for Fine Gael. But if it goes badly for them, if they do less well than expected, it'll be seen as this terrible error by Leo Varadkar, because he's handed over a weakened party to a leader who is kind of flailing from the start. So honestly, I just don't think anybody can say right now whether it's a good or bad move. I think it very much depends on what happens in the election.
Whatever happens in the local elections, the choices and how people feel about Fine Gael, it's probably quite likely to be based on the last 13 years in government, not necessarily who's been the leader for the last 8 weeks. So it's hard to say whether it will have any effect. But Leo Varadkar leaving, I would say it's not the worst thing for them at the moment. He didn't exactly cover himself in glory in the recent referendum campaign. He didn't campaign as much as some party colleagues. When he did, he came across as uncaring in a care referendum. And so having somebody else to be the face of Fine Gael might lead to some kind of bump. But at the same time, it's a tough job they have to convince an electorate that you're, you know, the change candidate when you've been in government for so long.
Yeah, and then looking at the coalition then, the current government, will this make it that bit more unstable? I know it's impossible to predict when there's going to be an election, when we know it's going to be within the next 12 months anyway. But is it more unstable or perhaps more stable, given we'll have a new leader who might be a little bit more popular than Leo Varadkar, or who might bring some new energy to the place.
I think the fact that Micheál Martin came out immediately after Leo Varadkar's speech yesterday speaks to the sense of security that Fianna Fáil want to see in this government. Micheál Martin and Eamon Ryan have both said that they want the new leader to keep this, to carry this government through to the full term, the full 5 years of it. So I think if there is any dissent or if there is any kind of rebellion, it would come from backbench Fianna Fáilers or backbench Green TDs who aren't happy with the new leader or who aren't happy with something in the bedding in process or anything like that. So I don't think it's predictable, but I think at the moment the signs are that for Fianna Fáil anyway, they want it to be business as usual, that they want this to be stable. And I mean, why not? Like, if you're in a job for 5 years, you want to do the full 5 years for the government.
And look, it could all depend on how the handover goes. I mean, you know, full disclosure, as it happens, we're about, you know, midday here on Thursday, and it's looking quite good for Simon Harris at the moment. He hasn't even, you know, confirmed he would be running, but he's got a lot of support. If it is the case that he wins at a cakewalk, well then, you know, they can just say it's business as usual. Yeah. And the rest of the parties can just move on and say, listen, we have a programme for government, we're pursuing this, and that's it. Whereas if it's a more of a fractious debate within Fine Gael, that could start open some cracks among the coalition.
Yeah, we're kind of very used to this kind of rotating thing with the rotating Taoiseachs. But also I was thinking back to Simon Harris in particular around COVID. You know, when he was Minister for Health and then they rotate someone else in and you think, oh, that's going to be a big difference. And actually it's all the same. Not to sound like every other political commentator, but like, you know.
It was a lot more seamless. I think there was a lot more conversation about it beforehand, about how will this work? How will this play out? And actually, people just changed jobs and everyone got on with it.
Yeah.
We saw the six ministers flank Leo Varadkar yesterday, very steely-faced, very serious.
Very serious.
giving anything away.
What was the reaction then to the resignation from his party, like from that high level of his kind of cabinet members right down to parliamentary party members and grassroots, the other parliamentary party members and grassroots?
Well, I think initially they were shocked like everybody else. And I think they were very open about saying that. I think they very much wanted to use a phrase that's been used a lot for 24 hours, to give Leo Varadkar his day and say this is his day to talk about his achievements and to be given the space for that. That's moved on now already. I think they're already in succession mode and who's going to be the next leader, who's going to be the next Taoiseach. And that is essentially where the conversation is among Fine Gael. You know, in the future, there may be more talk about Leo Varadkar and we can reflect on that. But no, they've already moved on. And in fairness, Leo Varadkar hasn't given them much time there to have a new leader in place by the Fine Gael Ardesh, which is, I think, the 5th of April. So, you know, they really have to get on it. If they want, they've outlined their schedule, nominations are open over the course of this coming weekend. And, you know, if there is a contest, there will be some hustings next week, Easter week. So a lot of good content for journalists.
Explain what hustings will look like.
Essentially means, I think they're going to have three in different parts of the country. It'll mean candidates going to different places and making their pitch to be leader, essentially. And how the contest works, 54 parliamentary party members, so that's members of Fine Gael, members in the Dáil, in the Shannon, and MEPs, they carry 65% of the voting power in the Electoral College. So essentially, parliamentary party members now have most of the power in selecting the next leader of the party. There are 20,000 ordinary members of Fine Gael. They have 25% of the voting power. So they vastly outnumber, you know, the TDs in their number, but in voting power, you know, they're a lot weaker, and the councillors then have 10%. So I think a lot of people would be aware that Simon Coveney won the vote among members in 2007, but he couldn't catch up with Leo Varadkar, who had already secured the endorsements of most TDs of the parliamentary party at the time. Looks like we're going that way at the moment, but, you know, remains to be seen.
Yeah, 20,000 people have 25% of the vote and 50-something people have 65%.
The maths doesn't quite
work. There's some great junior cert maths questions there. Who are the other likely candidates then? So obviously Harris has come out early and hard, as I heard Gerard Howland say on Morning Ireland this morning. but who would be likely to join him, or could we see a coronation here?
As it stands at the moment, everyone's kind of looking at Pascal Donoghue to see what he does, to see if he would, you know, create a credible challenge to Simon Harris, if that's the way you want to look at it. Helen McEntee was one seen as a potential leadership contender, has already ruled herself out. Simon Coveney has ruled himself out. He previously ran and wasn't elected. We may see kind of a more outside, you know, dark horse like Jennifer Karen McNeil, someone like that. But, you know, as it stands at the moment, she might run and there might be a contest, and that might be good for the party. A lot of Fine Gael members have said they want to see a contest. It's about renewal. But at the moment, it's looking like an uphill struggle.
I think the party have been very clear already that they want this to be a civilised, non-divisive contest. I think from everything that's been said, even in just the 24 hours since Leo Varadkar came out and made this announcement, when parliamentary party members have talked about it, they're very much... They either say we will happily swing behind one candidate, or we'll have a contest. It's all good for democracy. Whatever happens, we are happy to go with this. So I think that's the line from the party, that this is about unity, what's best for the party. So I think whatever happens, they're going to say that it's a good thing. If it's a coronation, they'll say that that's great. Mm. If there's a contest, they'll also say that that's great. So either way.
It's a thin line though, isn't it? That if they want a contest, so people like Helen McEntee, Richard Bruton have come out today and said, we want a contest, but they don't want a divisive contest. So like, how do you ensure those two things happen?
Yeah. How do you run a civilised fight? How do you run a civilised competition for the same job? I think it's down to if the parliamentary party members are already saying that this is what they want, I think it's sending a clear message to any possible contenders. When you're running, we don't want to see any toxicity, we don't want to see any personal abuse, we want to kind of be rising above like what a contest can be, so that it doesn't turn into some kind of brawl, which I can't really imagine the Fine Gael leadership contest turning into anyway. But I think it's just setting
or a fight for cabinet positions, I guess, then, because usually you roll behind one, you kind of get the goods then on the other end.
Also, like, if it's a one-sided contest, it's less likely to be divisive, you know, that kind of way.
Yeah.
And it's an opportunity for a party to, you know, set out their stall, and they can not only set out one stall, they can set out two stalls for people. So, I mean, in that sense, it's not a surprise that Fine Gael members are saying they want a contest. Whether or not it's a meaningful contest remains to be seen.
But I think that question about the kind of the scrap for ministerial roles is really interesting too, because there is going to be a question about, is there going to be a reshuffle with the new leader? Because obviously all ministers will resign. Like, once there is a new leader of the party, ministers will resign. But then it'll be a question for the new leader. Do they appoint a brand new cabinet, like 6 to 10 months-ish before the next election maximum? Will the public be happy with that? Do they do kind of a partial reshuffle? Do they just bring in, kind of tweak at the edges and bring in a couple of new faces maybe? Or do they leave it as it is? And do they emphasise that stability message and that unity message of Fine Gael? And I think that's actually going to be the first kind of big challenge for the new leader, to decide what they do. What kind of message do they want to send out to the party, but also to the public? What kind of leader are they?
Yeah, so the ministerial positions they have, so say, for argument's sake, Simon Harris does get it. He has a ministerial position that could just be filled, or they fill that and then have to shovel around the Fine Gael ministers that they do have.
Exactly. So what does he do? Like, what does that look like for him?
They have a lot less wiggle room than a usual Taoiseach would have, incoming Taoiseach, because of the arrangement that's currently in place.
So you mentioned there about Varadkar's legacy, and that we haven't really dwelled on it because, one, he hasn't been leader or Taoiseach for a huge length of time, say like the end of Kenny comparison. And also we just moved on because we want to know what's happening next. And I heard Mary Lou MacDonald say something similar in her interview today, but she said it would be up to political commentators to talk more about the legacy. So let's do a little bit of it here, Ronan. What do you think he will be remembered for?
I think I was writing a piece yesterday about, you know, how he will be remembered and essentially his legacy. And, you know, I think I came around to the conclusion that, you know, history is the best place to judge legacies, you know, not the morning after. But you can, I think, look at some successes, some failures, and make conclusions based on that. I mean, I think Varadkar himself, he tried to paint his own legacies yesterday in his speech, and he mentioned Brexit and how those negotiations were handled. You can certainly look at that and say, when he was elected as Taoiseach, he was someone that had, you know, a significant international, you know, recognition that we weren't used to as Irish people to have a Taoiseach in that. And, you know, he used that well in Europe to essentially, he had a good hand when dealing with Europe, because it was in Europe's interest to, in the EU's interest to, you know, make things difficult for the UK and to be supporting the existing member. But that was used particularly well. And I think Leo Varadkar, when he looks back on how he managed to, you know, have regulatory alignment between North and South, that is something that history will certainly perhaps be significant. He would also look towards the Eighth Amendment referendum, which was, you know, an incredibly complex, emotive issue that had, you know, dogged a lot of governments. And you know, he held a referendum on that. The referendum was passed. There was a lot of debate about, you know, who's the most person most responsible for that. And you could certainly argue that it's, you know, the grassroots people who aren't in the streets demanding it are the most responsible. But he held, you know, he held a referendum and it was won. So he would certainly jot that down. Yesterday, when he also looked at his successes, he wanted to speak about the economy and full employment. But I think sometimes these days, sometimes those economic measures aren't important to voters anymore. And when you look at, you know, the ability for people to own their own home, when you look at homelessness, there are clearly failures, not just of Rutger, but of Fine Gael's time in government. And it's going to be very difficult to ignore that when people are, you know, judging his legacy. He clearly wanted to be seen as, you know, a free marketeer in the Fine Gael mould. And I think that had a certain amount of cachet to it. But it also has a bit of a limit to the appeal to people. And I think we could see that, you know, repeatedly throughout the years as he attempted to speak about different issues and came across like he's not necessarily in touch with the struggles of normal people. I'm sure he'd dispute that, but I think that that's a fair summation of how he was seen among the general public.
I don't know if this is something that historians can or do mark, but I wonder about the lukewarm or kind of tepid response from voters towards him is something that will be part of his legacy, because I think there were these expectations that he would drive a boost for Fine Gael, like electorally and in the polls, and it never really materialised. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons for that. Like you said, the housing crisis is obviously going to be a big part of how he's remembered. But he just never delivered that electoral bounce that people would expect. So I think in a way he was very good with the kind of the big events, the set pieces like COVID, Brexit, but just on the day-to-day political things, he just never quite took off. He never quite ignited in that way. So, you know, I do think that is going to be one of the ways that he is remembered. And I also would say as well, just the fact that he was like the first gay Taoiseach, the first mixed race Taoiseach. And I think he reflected the zeitgeist of Ireland at the time when he was elected.
Yeah.
And I think that is something that history books, I think, will absolutely remember in a way that perhaps wasn't ever really a big focus of conversation in Ireland. I think it drove a lot of headlines abroad. But here it was kind of just seen as, you know,
well, I think that's something that I remember when he was elected, that was a big part of the discussion, that that was the international headlines, but there were people in Ireland saying, hold on a second, that's not actually the kind of person he is. But of course, internationally, people are seen differently than they are in domestic politics.
Yeah.
That happens everywhere in the world. So we can certainly acknowledge that it was significant internationally to have that message when he was elected. And I think when he was elected Taoiseach himself, you know, he made reference to that, saying that Ireland is a country that can elect myself, and it was important. But, you know, that perhaps has a shelf life among the Irish public, and it certainly did have a shelf life when he was elected in 2017. It was a short period where that was, when that was seen as a good thing. And once you get down to the nuts and bolts of politics, things are very different.
What next then for Leo Varadkar, Chris?
I think that's a really good question, because none of us have any clue. We've never had such a young Taoiseach stepping away from the role and still having, you know, 20, maybe 30 years based on the retirement age in this country. But I mean, he could have like a really long career after this. He could work, you know, for a long time after this. He's kind of said already that he doesn't want to necessarily step into a role in Europe, which probably isn't really a surprise. It's never really been linked with him in the way that it has been with, say, Micheál Martin. So I wonder if he is going to stay in politics. He is staying on as a TD for Dublin West. I think that's partly to do with the numbers right now, because if he had stepped down from that role, it would have been a real headache for the government. It would have put their majority at a kind of a razor slim majority. So I just wonder, is he going to stay in politics? Or, you know, I mean, he could end up still being a minister. Like, he could have a long career, like, in politics. Look at, say, David Cameron coming back in the UK. Maybe that'll be Leo Varadkar, like, in a few years' time. But I just wonder, he did say at one stage before that he would consider going back to medicine. Like, is he going to step away from public life completely and just go back to the job that he briefly had before entering politics? So look, we just don't know. And I just actually am really interested to see what he does. Like, what does this career path look like for someone stepping away from the biggest political role that this country has to offer?
Any guesses, Ronan? Is he going to get a column near us anytime soon? Not the journal.
A column and a consultant and giving speeches internationally. Like,
I mean, you wouldn't know. He was certainly a person who was very receptive to the media. I think if covering him as a reporter, you were always guaranteed a good quote. And I think that kind of served him well, I think, for a period, perhaps serving less well for other periods. You kind of live by the sword, die by the sword, if you deal with the media in that way. Listen, it's very difficult to know. I think every time this happens, I think in Ireland, we like to say, oh, there's a job in Europe. There's not always a job in Europe. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. But he certainly has an international profile, as we mentioned already. So it could serve him well. But like, as we said, we clearly don't know. And he's the man to ask about that.
Yeah. And one of his biggest last things was obviously that long trip with Joe Biden, where his access was kind of almost unprecedented, even for an Irish Taoiseach going over. We will be following all those developments of Raker's future career, but more importantly, who will be the next leader of Fine Gael and then the next Taoiseach of the country on the Journal. As Ronan said there, Fine Gael said they want the new leader in place by the Ardesh. That's the 6th of April. And then the following week, the Dáil will vote that person into the position of Taoiseach. So come back to us on the Journal to keep up to date on all of that. And Chris and Ronan, thank you so much for coming in and chatting to us today. Thank you for listening to The Explainer, and a big thank you to Ronan and Christine for joining me today. This episode of The Explainer was brought to you by senior producer Nikki Ryan. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider supporting us so we can continue to make more just like this one. There's a couple of things you can do. Head to thejournal.ie/contribute to become a monthly subscriber or make a one-off donation. You can also leave us a review and rating wherever you listen to your podcasts. It's a really great way to make sure other people will listen and love it as well. Thank you, and catch you next time.